for joining us, and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition. It's your turn. It's a book talk day. It's one of our more popular regular features here on It's Your Turn. And we do it every month on the fourth Monday of the month, and we do it through the cooperation of the Butler County Federated Library System. The various public libraries in the county take turns selecting a book, and then a representative comes in and we talk about it. It's kind of a book review on the air. Today we welcome here in our studio Caitlin Boland, who is the director of the Mars Area Public Library. Caitlin, good to see you. Nice to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me, Dave. It's good to be back.
You were here a few years ago, but you were working at the Butler Area Public Library
at that time. Correct. I was at coming up on just about two years at Mars now, and before that I was working at the Butler Area Public Library with that wonderful team for about 3 years. So it's been a nice journey under the in the Butler County Federated Library System, getting to learn my way around.
Well, the book that Mars has selected for discussion this month is Made. That's M-A-I-D, Made. As in cleaning employee. And the author is Stephanie Land. And this is a memoir, and it's something that we haven't reviewed a great deal, that type of literature. We have fiction, we have nonfiction, we have history and so on, but memoirs have been few and far between. So I was happy to see that you selected that.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I've definitely taken an interest recently in reading more memoirs and also some historical fiction, just trying to learn more about what other people are going through. And this book certainly put an emotional side to some of the bureaucracy of our country and brought some points to light. And so I think it was just a really interesting book in so many ways and so many levels.
Stephanie Land is a single mom, at least she was when she was writing this book. I don't know.
At this point, I do believe she's married.
Is she married now? Okay.
But
this is a relatively new book. In fact, it was just published early this year, so it's not quite a year old yet. By the way, the subtitle, Made is the title. The subtitle is Hard Work, Low Pay, and a Mother's Will to Survive. And she certainly goes into a lot of detail about trying to survive as a young single mom at a series of very low-paying jobs, all the while with, her daughter was just a toddler, really, whenever she started working as a maid.
Even I think an infant at the time, and the story took us through her toddler years. So very young child while this was happening in her life. Do you want to talk a little bit?
Yeah, sure. She's about 40 now, the way I calculated, right?
That's right.
She was born in, I'm talking about Stephanie Land now, she was born in 1979, so all of this is relatively recent.
Correct. Absolutely.
She was in her late 20s when the story begins.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so much of it is still relevant today. I mean, I think a small number of changes and improvements have been made with the system and small changes in minimum wage since this book was since her, it was relevant for her story, but still the overall problems that she's writing about are still significant problems that people are dealing with today.
The memoir covers 4 years, generally speaking, of her life as she was struggling to support herself. We're talking about Stephanie Land here. And her daughter on very, very slim wages and 7 different governmental welfare programs. 7 of them.
7.
I had heard of some of them. Food stamps, I think most everybody's heard of that. That's called SNAP these days.
Right.
Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, I think it stands for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the old food stamps. WIC, I'd heard of that. That's Women, Infants, and children. Is that right?
Right.
And you can get coupons for certain foods under that program, mainly dairy products, I think.
I would think so.
Yeah. And then there's LIHEAP. I think most folks have heard of that, the Low Income Energy Assistance Program.
Right.
So you can get help paying your heating bill.
Right.
During the winter. A Pell Grant, which she was able to get to help pay for her
education
classes that she was doing. A child care subsidy to help cover daycare for her little daughter so that she could work. And then there was something called TIBRA, which I'd never heard of before. Do you ever heard of that one? Rental assistance, a governmental program?
I actually have heard of that one, just because we help print out the forms for individuals who come into the library. But I can't honestly say I'm familiar with the entire process involved in it. But like anything else, I'm sure that they're jumping through some hoops for it.
I think it falls under the Section 8 umbrella.
Oh, yeah. That's correct. Yes.
And then Medicaid is the other one. So, and she was getting help through all 7 of these government or welfare programs while working mostly part-time as a maid. The one company that she was working for, they weren't allowed to work any more than 6 hours a day because they were afraid that they'd be too exhausted to work any more than that.
Oh, yes. Yes, I remember that. I read this book back in June, and so I'm a little bit of it is refreshing in my memory. But yeah, and I believe so she was working for possibly $7 an hour. And that wasn't even covering the fact that she had to drive from house to house that she was going to be cleaning for. So after gas was coming out, gas and mileage was coming out that she wasn't being reimbursed for at all, she was making something like $5 an hour. And like you said, she wasn't even able to work full-time because the job was preventing her from doing so. So she was in a really sticky situation. And then she, on top of that, she was juggling those 7 different government assistance programs, which aren't easy to coordinate because anytime they have a question about something or you need to resubmit something, you have to typically go to the office to do so, and then you're not being paid while you're doing that.
And many times you have to wait in line when you go to those offices.
Yes.
Try to work your way, first of all, to it's your turn to speak to a representative and then work your way through the bureaucracy. This period in Stephanie Land's life, this generally 4-year period that the memoir covers, she was living for most of that time, right up until the very end, in Washington State, about an hour north of Seattle, which adds to the irony because, you know, Seattle is the home of some of the biggest and wealthiest companies here in the United States. It's the home base of Amazon,
mm-hmm.
Boeing,
mm-hmm.
Microsoft, Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
They're all headquartered in Seattle.
That's right.
And here she is living a life of abject poverty. A little bit about her family background before we get into her having this child and so on and so forth. Stephanie Land had a pretty rocky childhood herself. Can you remember anything about her parents? And she just didn't get a whole lot of love whenever she was a kid.
Didn't get a lot of love, didn't get a lot of support. As you're reading through the story, I think she actually purposefully leaves some of that background out of her life, probably out of respect for her parents. But at the point that she's writing the story, the mother isn't even living in the country. She's out of the country with her own boyfriend.
In France.
Yes. And they come back to visit her. And I think at that point in time, I'm not sure what was happening at that point in time. She didn't have any money, and they took her out to dinner and then expected her to pay for dinner. So they definitely completely lacked perspective on where she was in her life, in expecting a 20-something year old to be able to foot the bill, everybody's bill for dinner, whenever she was, you know, currently in all of these assistance programs.
The occasion, it's a little bit hard to remember because she jumps back and forth in telling this story. It's not told in a linear,
right,
chronological way, and I have found myself many times being confused. She, you know, I'm thinking, well, what exactly is she talking about now? You know, where is she in this 4-year period? But the occasion that you're talking about, she decided she was going to have a birthday party for her little daughter, whose name is Mia, by the way, M-I-A, Mia. And it was either her first or second birthday. It didn't specify as much as I remember, but that's when she sent out invitations and she had some friends come, and her mother and father had divorced and then remarried. You know, the mom remarried, the father just had a girlfriend. And they essentially had abandoned her, really. And don't forget now, she's 28 at the time that she finds herself pregnant and has this little girl. So she's not a teenager anymore. She's, you know, almost 30 years old. But the ramifications of being essentially abandoned,
right,
you know, when she was much younger, keep bubbling up in her own life.
And that's after, in the book, she obviously got pregnant when she was with her boyfriend, and they were living together in a trailer, and the boyfriend was abusive towards her, and also abusive towards the daughter, mostly verbally and emotionally. But it really got to a point where she needed to call the police. She needed to get out. So she got out, which kudos to her for being brave enough and having the strength to look out for herself and her daughter, because that's certainly never an easy position, to be able to leave that situation with her boyfriend. And she took her daughter to go live with her father. But the father wasn't... He had an emotional breakdown himself, so he wasn't in any position to help her and her daughter in the way that they needed.
And they ended up going to a homeless shelter.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. In fact, that's the, I believe that's the first line in the book. My daughter learned to walk in a homeless shelter. Well, it's kind of catches your attention, you know.
That's pretty impactful.
Kind of like it was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Right. Yeah. 2019.
We'll take a break. We're talking about Made, a memoir by Stephanie Land. And this is all true. This is not fiction, by Stephanie Land. And it's a relatively new book, just published early this year. Has it been popular in the Mars Area Public Library? Well, you selected it for your book club to review earlier this year, right?
Yes, and it's been extremely popular, and it's one of the ones that came out as nonfiction, and I'm the librarian who does the nonfiction ordering, and so as I read read book reviews and read book summaries while I'm doing the ordering, I always try and peg which ones are going to be the big ones for the year. And this one I definitely pegged as being more popular, and I think I've been right.
We'll talk more about MAID here on It's Your Turn on WISR Book Talk Day. We'll be back after these words.
Preparation for fall has already started, and Osterling's Lawn and Garden has all the tools and items you'll need to keep checking the boxes off your to-do lists. They have pruning tools, rakes, bulb planters, and fall planting onions. Even fall flower bulbs will be arriving this month. They'll have tulips, irises, crocus, and more. Make sure to grab heavy trash bags for all your leaves and yard waste. It's also canning time at Osterling's Lawn and Garden. There are plenty of cabbage cutters, apple pickers, and canning salt. Get prepared for fall with Osterling's Lawn and Garden.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening. Every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Welcome back, Monday edition of It's Your Turn. I'm Dave Malarkey. Caitlin Boland is here from the Mars Area Public Library, and the book they've selected for review this month is MAID, a memoir by Stephanie Land. So we know that she had a rough childhood. I mean, it wasn't like they were in poverty. They always had enough to eat. They weren't rich people, but they certainly weren't impoverished. She just didn't get any love from her parents, and obviously they split up and went their separate ways, and she didn't get any support then either. She seemed to be a pretty smart cookie, but there's quite a gap there. I assume she graduated from high school when she was 18. She's 28 now, and she had dreamed of being a writer. How come she didn't go to school in that 10-year period, I wonder?
She was planning on it, but just taking some time in her life to figure herself out. She was living in a small town and had dreams of moving to Missoula. And so I think she was a coffee barista and or maybe a bartender.
Yeah, she worked in restaurants, coffee bars, and regular bars. But, you know, trying to figure it out, it was a 10-year gap there. How long was she going to work, or how long was she going to wait before she decided to pursue her degree in creative writing? 10 years.
I hear you. That's a long gap.
Yeah, that's kind of a long gap.
Uh-huh.
Missoula, by the way, is in Montana. More about that later, because that's where she ends up. The town that she was in at the time this all took place was Port Townsend, in the state of Washington, about an hour, she said, north of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a general idea of
where she was at,
where they're at. Then obviously it's on the Pacific Coast, Port Townsend. I was going to look it up on a map, but I never got around to doing that. Okay, so she's 28 years old. She is living with a boyfriend, and she gets pregnant. Now, my first thought when I read about this, number one, she doesn't go into any detail about how this happened. She makes this cryptic remark, just one sentence, that I was on birth control and nothing after that. And I'm thinking, she's 28. This is not like a 16-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. You know, doesn't she realize the potential consequences of this?
I think if you're on birth control, then you think you're being responsible anyway. So, I mean, accidents can happen. And certainly if you enter into that kind of conduct, even when you're on birth control, I think in the back of your mind, you know that there's always that very slim chance. I mean, I'm not a medical expert, but I know certain women, the pill is actually not effective for them. And I think somewhere in the book it might have mentioned that she might have found that out later. Again, very small, and I'm not a medical expert at all. So that might have possibly fallen into play for her, and that's just... One of the really unfortunate scenarios that a lot of women find themselves in when having children when they're not yet ready.
I found it rather disturbing, the incredible poor choices she made in men. The father of her child, Mia, his name was Jamie.
Right.
Do you recall how they met? She was walking home from a bar and saw this guy sitting on a park bench listening to John Prine. He had a couple of portable speakers hooked up to his phone listening to John Prine. She sat down beside him. Didn't know the guy, didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
This is late at night. Sits down beside him and says, "Where do you work?" I'm reading here. "Where do you work?" I asked, realizing that I knew nothing about him other than his music preferences. "The Fountain Cafe." He took a drag on his cigarette. "I used to be a chef. Now I just make the desserts." He nodded, and I knew I'd go to bed with him. And I'm reading this, and I'm thinking, what? What kind of an idiot are you?
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong in saying that, certainly. Think of her, yeah, I mean, I can only fight for her for a little, to some extent. She was definitely not mature at that point in her life, and that was not a mature decision at all, in any regard.
But again, I'm thinking, she's not 16, she's 28, for goodness sakes.
Mm-hmm. Was she 28 at that point in time?
Yes.
Yes. So, I mean, that was definitely one of several poor choices that she's made as you read the story.
There are others to come.
Yes.
So she moved in with this guy after a month in a trailer that he had. He claimed he was saving up money because he wanted to bicycle down to California somewhere.
I know.
I'm thinking, what? Can't you see instantly that this guy is a loser, you know?
Oh.
Really?
Dave, if only...
I mean, it's written all over the wall.
I think women need you to tell them that. I think you need to be around to make that call for more females. And males. More younger people making those poor decisions.
So she finds herself pregnant. He's not interested. He tries to talk her into getting an abortion.
She did not want to go that route.
No. So she has the baby. That's Mia, the girl Mia. And then she decides, well, he kicks her out, actually. He becomes very abusive,
mm-hmm.
mainly emotionally abusive. And then they argue over child custody. He right. kicks her out. He didn't want anything to do with the child. And then he's fighting her for custody of the girl.
Right.
They go to court. She wins. She's got custody, and they have some sort of a bizarre arrangement of visitation, which to me was never explained enough for me to understand it.
Yes. I think, like, the lack of background in the her growing up with her parents, we lacked a little background there, and we also lacked a little background on what that arrangement was, and so my interpretation of that is that she was trying to be respectful, because that's possibly still an arrangement that she has going on in her life.
3 days a week, he got Mia in the afternoon or something like that, and occasionally on the weekends. That was never specified. Was it every other weekend? I don't know. I don't recall reading it anywhere.
Yeah, I think it was probably every other weekend.
Do you think she used a real name? Was this guy's name really Jamie, do you think? Do you need to get permission from somebody to do that, or is that just in fiction? I mean, this is a memoir, so it's a true story. Think she'd be able to use his real name?
I would think so, but she might have thrown in some names there. Did she put a note in the book?
I didn't see anything, remember. You know, where it says the names have been changed, blah, blah, blah.
Well, she definitely would have put a note in the book had that been the case. So his name, I would have to assume, is Jamie.
And this guy keeps popping up. You know, as the story goes along, he's always there.
Yeah.
Seemingly causing trouble.
Definitely has an influence over the daughter and creating that. There's a really strong negative relationship between Stephanie and Jamie. And it definitely influences Mia, although you know that she tries to not have that happen towards the end when they are finally able to make that move and get away. You can see how difficult that transition is for Mia because she's emotionally been influenced by her father. But then her father, like when she goes to visit her father, he's clearly still having parties and pulling all the same shenanigans. Like they're making poor choices at 28 and at least Stephanie is trying to make better choices post having a child. And it seems like he's just still stuck in that rut.
I've read, in fact, I've done interviews with people, and we have a wonderful organization here in Butler County, Victim Outreach Intervention Center, that deals with abusive spouses, mainly men,
yes,
toward women. And many of the experts say, you know, because you sometimes ask yourself, why does a woman stay in that relationship? You know, why would she ever stay there? Well, in many cases, it's because that's the only source of income that she has. You know, there's a monetary thing. But this bozo was, you know, he was saving up money to take a bicycle trip. I mean, he really wasn't supplying any great financial help.
Absolutely not. I mean, yeah, he was a loser.
Yeah. But with a capital L,
capital. I mean, you could capitalize every one of the letters in loser, and that would be him.
It was during this period in her life when she started almost kind of informally doing maid work. She was working it wasn't for an agency yet. That came later. She was just working for someone who, you know, had a house to clean here and there. But that's when she started doing maid work.
Right. She realized that that might be a steady source of income that she could rely on, so she didn't have to rely on the boyfriend, so that it was helping her make that transition into government assistance. She was trying to figure out the programs, and the work of being a maid is something that she just kind of fell into. And once she was into it, she was really trapped into it, because it wasn't, it's not a livable wage. She wasn't being paid a livable wage. And then she was also trying to juggle all of those government assistance programs. At least she had a light at the end of her tunnel, which was that she did get a plan for herself through the Pell Grant to start school. And at that point in time, she said, all right, I have my child now. I need to make sure that we're working towards something, that I'm working towards bettering myself. And she was, you know, taking classes part-time to try and work on that whole process. And then she found herself with another guy.
Another bozo. We'll get another to that bozo in a moment. She so when Jamie kicks her out of their trailer, she goes to stay with her father. Her father by this time had a girlfriend. Her name was Charlotte, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And but she only stayed there for, I don't know, it was like a month and a half or something, and he had a breakdown, and she had to go to a homeless shelter.
Right.
With her
infant. A homeless shelter where other individuals had committed serious crimes, where there were a lot of drugs going on. It was a really eye-opening and tough environment, and certainly not one that anybody would ever choose to have their young child in. So that was definitely a tough situation for her. And she moved from she was able to get out of that initial housing development that was really bad.
Well, the first one was in a cabin.
Mm-hmm.
She was there for a while, and then she got this, whatever they called it again. It was that government agency that I'd never heard of. TIBRA, rental assistance, apparently some kind of Section 8 housing. Right. And that's when she moved into this, like, apartment block where she could hear everybody around her, the people above, the people below, the people next door.
Right.
I almost thought that the cabin would have been better than that.
I think the cabin was better than that. And once she was out of the cabin and in this place, she was wishing she was back in the cabin. And she was also trying to figure out how she was going to better this situation for herself and for her daughter. Meanwhile, she's in this, not only is she struggling to find housing, but she doesn't even have anything to put furniture in the house. That was in itself a struggle. As you're reading through the story, it's amazing to think about the fact that, you know, for her, a twin bed was such a huge thing. At one point, she was given a twin bed, and somebody who was giving it to her thought it was for her daughter, and really it was for herself. And then I think they ended up sharing that twin bed.
They both slept in it.
Yeah.
Now, it was during this period that she, as we mentioned before, she had done some informal cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
But then she went to work for an actual cleaning agency.
Right.
Where she had a list of clients. She would go to people's homes, like, sometimes every other week, sometimes once a month.
Yes.
And then she'd go back there the next time. So it was steady work, but it still was limited hours.
Limited hours.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. So she had a struggle there, and then of course any time her child was sick, which happened, anybody with children knows that happens all the time when they're in a daycare. She's just trying to give her Tylenol, get her through the day, because if her child's so sick that she can't work, then they're not making any money, and they're not making ends meet as it is. There's another element to this story, which is that she's getting to know these people who she's cleaning houses for, even though they don't even see her. Most of them are out doing their own jobs during the day, and so to them, she's just the same old person cleaning their houses. They don't know if there's ever a transition or a change there. But while she's cleaning their homes, she's learning so much about the individuals, and they name the chapters, what, the sad house.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, she has the name. She develops the sad house, the chef's house, the hoarder house, and the porn house.
Yes.
We'll take a break. We'll talk more about this memoir, true story, sad in many ways, by Stephanie Land. It's called Maid, M-A-I-D, and a picture of the dirty rubber gloves on the front cover that she was part of her, they called it a tray. When she would go in cleaning, they had trays with supplies and stuff on them that they would take into the house. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. Stick around. More to come as we discuss Maid by Stephanie Land. We will be right back.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium, and they now have a store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? For starters, they have so many glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a vape juice bar. And of course, they carry a variety of standard tobacco products too. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department stocks a large selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Talking about Maid, it's the book talk, book of the month that we're talking about. It's a memoir by Stephanie Land, and Caitlin Boland is here from Mars Area Public Library to talk about this book. I mentioned that, to me at least, it seemed like she jumped around a lot. I'm reading, I don't know, 100 pages in, and all of a sudden she says, oh, by the way, we moved to Anchorage when I was age 7. I thought they lived in Washington State the whole time, but her parents up and moved to Anchorage, Alaska. And as far as I know, she never said why.
Right.
It's just, oh, okay. Now you're living in Anchorage for a while.
Yes. A few parts of spotty writing, and that's definitely one of them where, I don't know if she ever fit that piece into the puzzle and why that was relevant. Did it affect the story in any way? I mean, I don't think so.
Well, it turns out about 100 pages later that there's a little note in there where she says, it talks about how she'd moved into a cabin with a boyfriend while she was in Alaska. And I'm thinking, goodness gracious, this is sad. I mean, you know, we're getting to the stage where, you know, she's almost promiscuous, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
She moves in with a guy in a cabin in Alaska. She could have been very old then. And then she moves in with this bozo Jamie, who doesn't even have a high school diploma. Loser with a capital L painted all over the place.
Right.
And he kicks her out. She goes to the homeless shelter. She gets the Section 8 housing. And then the next thing you know, she meets another guy.
Yeah.
She decides, and this, again, the further I got into the book, the less I could find myself being sympathetic for this this woman. She said, and I actually marked it, she said at the top of one page, I missed going to bars for a beer.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, you got a 1.5-year-old daughter. You don't have 2 nickels to rub together.
Yes.
But I need some socialization. So she goes online. She does have a computer and internet. She goes online and meets this guy, was it Travis?
Yes.
Is the next guy in line.
Mm-hmm.
And she ends up a month later going to live with him on his family's farm.
Right.
And I'm thinking, this is very sad. This is a very sad situation. I mean, how many poor choices can you make, for goodness sakes?
That's her really trying to hang on to a glimmer of hope that people are good and somebody will love her, and maybe this is the one who's going to love her, and how can I make it work with this guy that he's going to love me and he's going to love my daughter and we can make a life out of this.
But wait a minute, Caitlin. She finds this out after she's known him for a month after meeting him online? Really? Really?
I know.
And by this time, she's like 30, you know. And we're not talking about an immature teenager here.
You can't put an age limit on maturity, though, Dave.
I guess not.
No.
Well, by the way, surprise, surprise, this relationship doesn't work out either long term, right?
No, it doesn't. It works out for a while, and he is helpful in many regards and pulled her out of the housing for a time period, and he did at least have a good relationship with the daughter. He was a better influence on the daughter than I think her dad was. I wouldn't peg him as the loser with a capital L as you would with Jamie. So at least she made baby steps in the right direction. But ultimately, she was the person who needed to figure it out for herself first. And she needed to figure out that she didn't need these guys. And she did point on touch on that throughout the book of expressing that she knew that she needed to just love herself and worry about taking care of herself. And she was the only person who could do that. And so part of this book is her finding, it was, I think, her journey in finding that. And I think she did it later in life than you anticipate or hope somebody would. 30 isn't terribly old these days, though. People are in those mindsets for a longer period of time, and I think that's just where she was in her life. But you're seeing her making these choices and saying, oh, stop, please, stop making those choices.
Yes.
There are definitely some moments in her story where, she comes into just a little bit of money, And for me, I've gone through, me personally, my husband and I have gone through the Dave Ramsey books and those programs. And so we save money. Like, if we come into a little bit of money, we're like, how can we use this to our advantage? How can we save it? I'm a saver and a scrimper, and that's just the person I am. So when I read this book and I saw her come into a little bit of money at some point, and she went out and did something frivolous for herself, I said, oh my gosh, you are not in a position to do that. And then I had to step back. And when I discussed this with my book club, they were saying, well, you know, you just emotionally need that every once in a while. But for me as a person, I guess so. But I'm still the person that if I come into some money, like, I need to save it. And she didn't have any money, and she needed to really make the money that she had work to her advantage in the best way possible. So definitely some moments where you're just, you know, yelling at her.
She talks about something, and I never heard this term before, the welfare cliff. And it had to do with trying to make as much money as you could, but not making so much that you exceeded the threshold and lost some of your government welfare money. So we'll take a break and we'll talk about the welfare cliff when we come back. More of Book Talk here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. In today's fast-paced world, our lives get a whole lot easier when we trust experts. We trust people who know what they're doing. And when it comes to shipping, I trust Going Postal Butler. They're right off Newcastle Road on Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's easy, too. I just cruise on back, go say hello to the friendly folks inside, and they package my items for shipping. And that saves me a whole lot of time from trying to wrap my item, trying to find the right size box or the bubble wrap or the mailing labels. With Going Postal Butler, I know they provide quality service. They've got great prices. Most importantly, they are trustworthy. So I know that my package will go where I need it to go. That's Going Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex, your friendly neighborhood shipping store, Going Postal Butler.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there starts here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem, the bus will get you there. Cause that's what we do.
Hop the bus,
leave the driving up to us.
The bus,
we're going your way.
I mentioned the phrase, the term that Stephanie Land talked about in here, the welfare cliff, where if she made too much money, and obviously she was trying to make as much as she could, then she would lose some of these seven governmental welfare programs that she was on. She said one month she made $50 over the limit, and she immediately had to pay a $50 copay for childcare for Mia. So it was a wash.
Right.
You know?
And this is one of the reasons why I like this book, is because it brings some of these issues to the surface, and how difficult these assistance programs make it for people to actually be able to better their lives, to be able to get out of that loop, because that's ultimately what they tell us these programs are there for, to help people better themselves so that they don't need it, but they're stuck in this system that makes it impossible for them to get ahead. So her story is a great reminder of that. And she also points out those ugly points where she's in the grocery store and calculating out the number of coupons that she can have or be able to use towards milk, so she can get milk for her child. And can she buy that organic product that she feels strongly that she needs, that her daughter should have? And the government assistance program is making it impossible for her to be able to just provide the milk that she's trying to provide for her daughter. you know, just some tough issues.
She also talks about, and I've seen this in checkout lines at the grocery store, mm-hmm. where people are eyeing suspiciously individuals who, you know, have SNAP coupons and food stamps and so on. You know, looking at what they have in their
God forbid shopping you have basket. A bag of Cheetos, right?
Yeah, exactly. And she talks about how, you know, humiliating that was. One guy would say, "You're welcome," like that,
right.
You know, insinuating that he was paying for her food.
Right.
And the humiliation that she had almost every time she went through the, you know, the grocery line.
Yeah, that's disgusting behavior. It really puts it in perspective for you. Here she was really just, she was working really hard as she possibly could, working on her education on the sideline, really just trying to better herself. And then not only is the government assistance programs difficult for her to navigate, but also then she's getting this judgmental backlash from any passerby. It only increased her anxiety and made it even more difficult for her.
I was reading over my notes here, and Caitlin's smiling because I've got like 5 pages of notes I took when I was reading this book. I was a little bit mixed up. She moved in with Travis on his parents' farm 4 months after their first date.
Okay. So give her a little bit of credit there.
But it was Jamie that she decided she was going to sleep with the first night that she met him.
Yeah.
Because she liked the music he was listening to when they were sitting on the park bench.
But she was on birth control, so accidents happen, I guess. It's only 99% effective.
I don't know. As I say, the more these liaisons stacked up, the less I found it easy to empathize with her plight.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she just kept making these ridiculous poor choices. This guy, he was living on his parents' farm. They would give him, you know, $100 for cleaning out the... They boarded horses, as I recall. And he would have to clean out the stalls and muck them out and everything. And he expected her to help, but he never gave her any of the money.
I know. I was so frustrated for her.
And she finally said, well, you know, listen, I help every morning doing all these chores. Don't you think that, you know, I should get a little bit of your share of the money? And he said, no.
Yeah, and it was...
I just want you to help me and then clean the house and cook dinner.
And then
for no money.
And then she had to, on top, just so she could get some money for herself, then she had to add some cleaning jobs back into the mix, right? That way she could start saving up for herself and for her daughter on the sideline, because he just wasn't, he was expecting way too much from her and not giving her any sort of resources that she could use for her future. So then she says, well, I can still do all of this for you, and then I'm going to go get a job on top of that, on top of it all. You know, as she made some poor choices, but boy, she had a work ethic like you wouldn't believe. I think a lot of women out there are doing the same thing.
She was cleaning one guy's house. I don't think she had a name for this guy. He was wealthy. His name was Henry, I think. And he gave her some lobsters. Remember that story?
I do.
He said, would you like a couple of lobsters? He had a big party or something, and they were left over. And she said, well, yeah. So he went to go get them, and she called Travis. She was in the process of cleaning his house, and she called Travis.
Yes.
And, hey, getting a couple of lobsters tonight. You know, can you get the grill ready, and we'll be ready to go? And his response was, did you check the transmission fluid in your car?
Oh, yeah. This was the pivotal point where she thought those lobsters could actually save their relationship, and that was his response. So she was so upset by that. She was so terribly upset because here she was being presented this gift. She'd never gotten a gift before. A gift was kind of unheard of for her, and here she was given this prize, and she thinks, wow, this might actually, maybe this will rekindle our relationship, and we'll be able to go forward. And that was his response to it. So,
well, what a Debbie Downer. His routine was she would make dinner, he would eat dinner, and then he would go sit on the couch watching television.
While she cleaned the house.
While she cleaned up, and this after she had worked in the day and yada yada. And she finally went in one night and stood between him and the television and challenged him on it. And he stood up and physically moved her away, sat back down again, and said, I want you out of here.
Right.
He gave her 1 month to leave.
Right. So then she... So that was over, and then she just needed to figure out a way to transition her and her daughter back into the rental system, which she found a place. It was incredibly difficult within her budget, but she did find a place, and that place had black mold growing in it. The only place that she could find within her budget under this specific government assistance program had black mold growing in it, and her daughter kept repeatedly getting sick, and they figured it out. It was from the black mold. And my one thought there was, okay, so you're stuck in this place that your daughter is getting sick, and your doctors are telling you you need to get her out. And she was just incredibly frustrated and upset that they didn't understand that she couldn't get out. But I just wonder, and I kind of hope, was she still searching that entire time for a new place? Because she didn't say she did. She just kind of said, but we're here, and I'm trying to make the best of this situation. But as a mother, you know, I would have been beating down the doors trying to get my child into a better situation, or beating down the doors of the landlord to say, hey, you need to, I have rights too. You need to fix the black mold situation here, because we deserve a healthy living environment and we're paying you for that.
Was she still getting, she got $275 a month in child support from Jamie. Was she still getting that at this point? Do you remember?
I believe the child support would have been carrying on. I don't recall that it was.
Which was kind of surprising, because she said in the beginning that he had said in a very expletive-filled tirade that he wasn't going to pay anything for this kid. And then the next thing you know, he's paying $275 a month. That must have been part of the child custody arrangement that they approved through the court.
Must have been, but that was definitely one of the things that they did not discuss in detail in this story. She didn't go into that at all. I do remember reading, you know, his complaint of, you don't even send diapers with her when you send her to me. I have to pay for everything. So he's definitely not fruitful for them. Maybe she's getting the money from him. Maybe she wasn't, you know. Maybe he didn't send it. Maybe even if he was supposed to send it, maybe he didn't.
I'm not familiar with how that works. I don't know. Does the father send a check every month to the mother? Is that how that works?
I would think so.
Well, I didn't know whether he was still in the game or not with the $275 a month.
I don't think she was clear on that. Definitely a point that she didn't address in detail.
A few final thoughts on Made, a memoir by Stephanie Land, who's, by the way, still very much alive. Caitlin and I have calculated that she must be about 40 now.
Right.
She was 28 whenever this memoir begins. We'll take a break and be back to wrap up our conversation after these words.
Medical marijuana is legal in Pennsylvania for anxiety and anxiety disorders, such as panic attacks, nervous tics, and obsessive compulsive disorder. Go to cccregister.com or call 888-316-9085 to get your medical card today at Compassionate Certification Centers. That's 888-316-9085. Look for the flag or log on to cccregister.com and pre-screen for medical marijuana. Call 888-316-9085 and get answers to your medical marijuana questions today.
The days and weeks immediately following the loss of a loved one are so difficult, so personal. You think, does anybody really understand how I feel? I can't even understand it myself. I wish I could talk to someone about it. Well, you can. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler offers a unique program called Someone's Caring. It's carefully and sensitively designed to help you ease the pain, to help you fill the gaps when you feel so alone. Men and women are invited to attend. Yes, men are beginning to realize it's okay to express their feelings in a small group setting. They're finding that it really helps. We offer four programs: a grief support group for those who have lost a loved one, for survivors of a suicide, for bereaved parents, and individual sessions. Our own trained bereavement specialist Robin S. Miller personally conducts the sessions. Call us at Thompson Miller, 724-287-3706, 287-3706. We can help. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Wrapping up our conversation, our review of the memoir Made, M-A-I-D, Made by Stephanie Land. Caitlin Boland is here, the director of the Mars Area Public Library. You made a point during the break there that we should have talked about before, Caitlin.
Sure. So we had the Sad House, the Porn House. What were the other ones?
The Chef's House, the Hoarder's House. She never met these people, but she began to learn about their lives from the things that they left lying around,
right?
Whether it was toothpaste, coffee cups, porn magazines in the case of this one guy, or whatever. And so she began to put their lives together, even though she'd never met them, just by the fact that she cleaned their house every week.
Right.
And then you said,
yeah, that, she figured out it was a little bit of a light for her that, you know, these people that they were paying for her to clean their house, they clearly have a stronger income than she does, but they're not in happy situations themselves. And so it's kind of a message of money isn't everything. And that's certainly true. It's not. And there's a way to work, go through your life and find those moments of happiness, and money doesn't always play into that.
But on the other hand,
it's certainly
helpful.
They
had enough money that they didn't have to clean their own house. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And in fact, they did mention at some point during the story that they were paying a good deal more money to the company itself than she was making.
Mm-hmm.
So. Just something to note.
I found it got a little bit repetitious at times. You know, how many times can she describe cleaning a toilet? She seemed fixated on that for some reason. You know, I would turn a page and say, oh, here we go again. Vivid description of cleaning a toilet.
Yeah. Well, it's not a pleasant experience when you're cleaning your own toilet, let alone somebody else's. So I give anybody props who's doing that for their workload.
I was struck by the fact that, and folks, if you've just been listening to us, you may have, I don't know, conjured up an image in your own mind of Stephanie Land, what she must look like. She's an extremely attractive young woman.
Yes.
Which might fly in the face of what people had in their mind's eye whenever we're talking about her life.
Yeah, she looks just like you or me. And at this point, I mean, she did come through on the other side of it and was able to...
Did she end up going to university?
She finally got one more assistance. What was it called?
Some kind of a scholarship for... I wrote it down here. Give me a second till I find that page. It was a scholarship program that I'd never heard of.
specifically for women.
Yeah, a WISP. Help for women with a child, I guess, to go to school. And she got pretty sizable scholarship there and started. She went to Missoula, to the University of Montana.
Yeah, she was able to finish her education at Missoula. I think she went on to do her master's. And now she's a very successful writer, and she's writing on subjects that matter, like her story in this book, just bringing in awareness to poverty, bringing in awareness to the social system's injustices of how difficult it is. For people in government assistance programs, and just bringing some of those issues to light so that there's not always that negative connotation built around, you know, if you're on food stamps, then you must be the laziest person in the world. I mean, it's just not true. And definitely from reading this book, if there's anything, you're not going to peg her as lazy. She is not a lazy individual. She's a very hardworking individual. And she did make it to a better place, but what a journey it was for her to get there. And it was a journey of finding herself as well, and knowing that it was a self journey, and it wasn't she didn't need these bums to get herself there, you know?
These bozos.
Mm-hmm.
The title is Made, M-A-I-D, by Stephanie Land. Hard work, low pay, and the mother's will to survive. Well, thank you, Caitlin. It's good to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you back with us. We'll look forward to the next time in close to a year it'll be before you rotate back in. But
yep.
it was good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, I'll give you my copy, and you can put it back into circulation.
Will do.
In the library system. Okay. Well, that wraps up our program for today. Thanks for being with us. Keep your umbrella handy. It could be some more showers here and there the rest of the day, but tomorrow and Wednesday look great. I'm Dave Malarkey. We'll see you tomorrow, 12:30, for the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here